Next, I want to call up Jamie Whitney. She's our next speaker. And if you think that Freddie terrified you, wait until you hear Jamie. Jamie is going to speak to us about hospital supplemental reimbursement in 2025 and beyond. Yes, there will be some prognosticating by Jamie. She's going to be suggesting what might be coming. She's going to give us changes to the disproportionate share hospital program, the uncompensated care program, and directed payment programs. We could rename this presentation, Jamie, Show Me the Money. I will keep my introduction short. It's a pleasure to introduce Jamie. She is well known to me, having worked at our firm before. She is the chief legal officer of Adelanto Healthcare Ventures. Some of you may know one of her buddies there, Carlos Saffarini. I introduce Jamie to you without hesitation. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Yvonne. I really appreciate that introduction. Everyone, Freddie's talk just now was fantastic. I was taking notes because what I'd like to talk about today is really sort of zooming in on a couple of the line items that he flagged for you on that congressional budget reconciliation sort of wish list. So as he pointed out, the Congress is looking for around $880 billion in cuts, mostly from Medicaid, and they're also messaging that they don't want to cut benefits. They don't want to cut services to individuals because that's very politically unpopular. So the catchword that's been floating around D.C. right now in op-eds and think pieces is fraud and abuse. And you're starting to hear that phrase, fraud and abuse, be applied really broadly. That net is sort of starting to tangle up technical, apolitical, nonpartisan policy tools that have been around for a long time. Specifically, I think Freddie mentioned Paragon. You're hearing Paragon talk a lot about fraud and abuse in the context of provider taxes and state-directed payments. So normally, provider taxes and state-directed payments are my bread and butter. My company helps hospitals navigate Medicaid supplemental payments. That's usually kind of a niche issue that probably not many people outside this room are that interested in talking about, but right now it is getting a big spotlight on it because of these congressional budget cut discussions. It's really interesting to hear provider taxes in particular described as legalized money laundering or as state schemes to inflate the cost of the Medicaid program, because provider taxes have been around for decades. They are in the Social Security Act. They are black letter law. They're very much a normal, longstanding part of how states finance the non-federal share of their Medicaid programs. State-directed payments are a little bit newer. They first began to become prominent in, I think, around 2016, and they sort of go hand-in-hand with the rise of Medicaid-managed care in a lot of states. So the key thing about state-directed payments is that they are typically run through Medicaid-managed care. So in order to be eligible for the payments, they're very much utilization-driven. They are quite often linked to participating in a Medicaid-managed care network, although that connection has been decoupled a little bit in recent rulemaking. And they often have a quality tie. Even if they're just a straight rate increase, they have to be tied to the state's quality strategy, and many times they are explicitly conditioned on a provider meeting a particular quality metric. So again, it's a little hard to see how this type of network adequacy, quality-driven payment is waste, fraud, and abuse, but that is what you're hearing in the context of some of these budget reconciliation discussions. So what I'd like to do today is talk a little bit about how Texas uses, in particular, those state-directed payments and those provider taxes, which locally we call LPPFs, local provider participation funds. They are very important to our state. They really do form the backbone of our Medicaid payment ecosystem here in Texas.